Everyone, welcome to the very first edition of DCS Academy Live, which is a new kind of live webinar. And I thought it's always great to come together these days. I know a lot of folks do podcasts and we participate in webinars as we do, but I thought like coming together and joining into a discussion is always great. And it's much better than, I think, you know, just sitting there and listening to a piece of media, basically. So, and with that, I would like to encourage you guys to use the chat, maybe put in your name, where you're coming from, and if you want to, your LinkedIn profile information as well, so we can interact. And I find this always very, very helpful. As you know, we're talking about digital CS. And I have Holly with us. Holly Goodliffe, you know, you're based in the US in the West Coast, and you are known for being the super expert in this field. And I'm very, very glad and honored to have you here this morning, this afternoon. Let me quickly run, before we come to your introduction, Holly, I would like to just do a little run through what we want to do today. I know some folks have, you know, received the invite and know already what we want to talk about. Obviously, it's digital CS, but as you know, digital CS is a huge area and we want to go down and make it more tangible and ask questions like, where do start? Where do we start? Is it actually AI on steroids? Is it, you know, how can we use it? How can we use the return on investment or prove the return on investment? And I'd love to also discuss with Holly things like leadership, CS leadership and digital CS, and how can we bring all this together? And of course, Holly, as an expert, I would like you to tell us a little bit about your vision of digital CS maybe in 3 years or in 1 year from now on. Going forward. So just before we jump in, a quick intro of myself. I'm Thomas Voigt. I'm running the CS Academy now for a couple of months. I am a former VP of customer success at GWI and have worked in B2B SaaS for a couple of years already and scaled companies from 3 million to 10 million, from four people to 50 people. And I am now basically working with scale-up companies, Series A to C, and help them to establish a CS function, in particular, making sure they are aligned across all the revenue functions like marketing and sales as well. So that's quite important. My focus is CS leadership, so I talked a lot. Holly, tell us a little bit more about you. Tell us a little bit about how you came to digital CS.
Yeah, well, I had a background in marketing and customer experience. So when this thing called digital CS started happening, it was a really natural bringing together of my interests. And so I've had the privilege of building digital CS functions and teams 3 times in a row at 3 different companies, huge, medium, and small company. And now what I do full time is I consult with clients who want to do just that, get digital going in their company or make their digital motions even stronger, make them fit even better with the human CS motions. So I love doing this work. I love talking about this. So I'm thrilled to be chatting with you, Thomas, and I'm thrilled all of you are here and really welcome your questions of what are the toughest challenges you're facing? What are the biggest blockers? So Thomas and I can really help you think through those things.
Yes, great. Yes, you mentioned, guys, we are open to questions at any time. We do have a little bit of a Q&A at the end of this session, but if you have some questions for Holly, just put them in the chat and I try to monitor this as well as asking questions and do multitasking and I hope it will work out. So, Holly, shall we dive into the topic a little bit?
We should. Let's do it. Let's talk digital CS.
Amazing. So here's the thing. When I came across Digit CS, I thought like, right, is that now the new kind of wine in old barrels? Why are we calling this Digit CS? And I was, I'm a member of Pavilion, for example, and this group of folks, go-to-market folks, like to talk a lot about efficiencies and go-to-market as well. And I remember we were talking a lot about the tail end, basically kind of using, you know, your kind of C clients, the ones that are potentially not, you know, the ones who are lucrative, and making sure we can just keep them, renew them, but have a very little effort and basically just have auto renewals and ideally no human contact. So is that right? What is Digital CS? Educate us.
Yeah, well, I think exactly what you just described, Thomas, is where a lot of it started, was with companies, frankly, giving zero human love to the long tail customers and to those tiniest customers, and that not making sense money wise. And then, you know, especially with lots of economic changes, companies being like, oh, we do want to reach out some to those long tail customers. And so I think a lot of companies did start there a few years ago. Most companies have really evolved now, though, to seeing that Digital CS is actually for every segment of customers and is incredibly helpful to your most huge, most lucrative, most strategic accounts. And so, when I work with clients, I really urge them to think about how can Digital CS benefit all your customers. And of course, for your long tail, for your lowest tier of customers, they might need a little additional help beyond what the others need. But for the most part, whatever you set up, whatever programs you set up for Digital CS are really useful and really relevant across the board for all your companies. Because if you think about it, even your users at the most huge enterprise accounts, like they still want to self-serve. That's what they expect these days. And Digital CS really helps them do that by serving up these digital resources to them and these digital experiences to let them figure out how to get value from the tool on their own without a human having to hold their hand every step of the way.
So that's quite interesting. When I, for example, use my tools like Canva or Kajabi or whatever, I exactly had the same as me being observant and just looking at me as a user. I really like to go to the point, find my information quite quickly, and not always like to just have a human person, because I believe it's too slow. It's like you have to identify yourself and whatever. I want my information very quickly. So do you think that's the main reason why Digital CS now is so popular? It's just getting into, so is there a value building part of Digital CS that was missing before, where we just need to serve customers now better than we potentially have done in the past?
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. We need to serve our customers better. We need to help them get to value faster. Customers expect it now. And you made a good point that different users at our customer account, they want to learn in different ways. So that is exactly why it's super important to use, to have omni-channel campaigns and to have both pull campaigns where it's like we're trying to get them to come to a surface like our online community or maybe our online university or our documentation. But then also we want to have push campaigns, which are actually putting this right in front of them. Like, do you want to click on an email? Do you want to have a hotspot or a checklist right there in the UI of your product? Different customers are going to be interested in different times. And at the most sophisticated companies are learning over time by looking at the data, right? Oh, Thomas likes to learn by clicking on an in-app guide. Let's serve everything up to him that way and stop showing him the other things. That's why it's super important to really meet your customer wherever they're at, your user wherever they're at, in the way they want to get value from the product, and not even calling it learning, but just calling it, we're just getting you to value right now. It's just bite size. It's very immediate. It's very quick. That I'm not going to disrupt your work. I'm going to just get you to value very quickly.
Yeah, yeah. So if we all work in customer success or in go-to-market, and we are often being tasked by our managers to get our head around, you know, digital CS. So what would your advice be to say, let's start with digital CS? So let's assume we work in B2B SaaS. Let's assume we work in a scale-up. Let's assume we want to get our heads hands dirty and just start building a digital CS department or start including digital CS initiative. Is there something like a path that you recommend to follow, or at least is there a starting point?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the starting point, honestly, in my opinion, is to think about what is the needle you're trying to move? What is the metric you're trying to move? What is the, it doesn't even need to be as sophisticated as like, we've got a whole digital CS strategy, but I see far too many companies jumping straight into like, let's go ahead and send our first email. Let's go ahead and create our first in-app guide. Let's buy the tool that can help us do that. Or let's have our engineering team go ahead and put a checklist or a hotspot right there in the product UI. I mean, love the eagerness to get in there. But a lot of times I talk to companies that have been doing that for a few months or even a couple years. And I'm like, great, what's all this adding up to? What are you actually trying to change about your business with this? And they can't tell me. So that's a problem, because that's a department that's going to get defunded pretty soon if you can't prove some revenue impact. So just before you jump right in, maybe you already know exactly what your goal is. A very common goal I hear is, I want to be able to increase the ratios that my human CSMs are able to handle, right? So in essence, I want digital to provide air cover. I want for more questions to be getting answered by digital before my user even has to go ask their CSM for help. Great. So what does that success look like in order for CSM ratios to be able to go up? Also depends on what are your CSM's goals, right? Because you're trying to get them to that goal faster so that they can handle more accounts. So I always tell my clients, there's really no use starting a digital program unless it's going to contribute to your company's revenue. The North Star, in my opinion, for every single thing you do should be that you are increasing the likelihood, if we're talking SaaS B2B, you're increasing likelihood of this account renewing, and you're increasing likelihood of them expanding, right? So what are those, in most of our cases, that's at least a year to see that they're going to renew. We can't wait that long to see whether our programs are working. So we need early leading indicators that are correlated to those lagging indicators. So that is where I really suggest you start, if your company hasn't already done that, to work with the data analysts or to get access to that data yourself, to be able to do a correlation analysis, looking like to who has churned and who has renewed and who has expanded in the last year, and seeing what are the drivers, what are the things that they all have in common if they're renewing. In general, it's going to be that they're increasing usage. They're increasing daily, weekly, or monthly active usage, whatever is the right cadence for your company. I also have some clients who, instead of using active usage as their leading indicator, maybe use health score. Maybe they've developed a great health score that is really good at predicting churn versus renewal and expansion. And so it could be that the goal of your digital programs is all about lifting usage or all about lifting health score or whatever that leading indicator is for you. So then once you know that, that's a guide to everything you try, Thomas. So like, if you try your first email, or if you try your first in-app guide, or you try launching a digital community, like your goal is going to dictate like exactly what you try. Okay, like how do we get them to increase usage? What do we know from all the interactions we've had with them, or all the data we look at, that it's going to get them to increase their usage? What is that happy path? What are those 5 to 10 actions within the product that we really want them to take to get them to that value? Then you know what to build your campaigns around, right? And then you know what is your measure for success to see, did it work? Did we do what we were trying to do? Or did it not work very well? And we're actually using our customers' attention on something that isn't very useful. So let's turn this one off and try a different approach.
I love this. I call this normally the ideal customer experience So when you think about, you know, your journey and particular the onboarding phase, where you think about, you know, what is the ideal situation you want your customers be in? Obviously, you've got an idea, you know, when you run it. That's great. But what I'd like to do is, and we talked about this data, obviously, is to look at basically my onboarding calls and look at, or like almost, you know, calls that were happening in the sales periods as well, when you were talking, you know, to sales reps going forward, and just looking at what are the common themes that I see. As you, what I literally do is I use a tool like Orchard or anything like that, and just basically across my different recordings, I try to see is basically a theme, like what are the clients really looking for? What are the, what are we talking about? What is really driving value? And then I try to basically create profiles. And we talk already about, you know, segmentations. And then if I see gaps, basically that between the ideal experience that clients describe that I want to achieve as well, and what I then find out in these calls, right? This is basically that I want to focus on. Would you agree?
Yeah, completely. And some companies call this customer journey mapping. Some call it finding their ideal customer profile or their ideal happy path. It's all great. And it's actually a place where AI can plug in really well if you have all those like call recordings. I mean, it used to be we ourselves had to like look for all those patterns, right? And look for all the patterns in the data. But if you have the data of what makes a customer succeed, and you have all this qualitative information from calls and other sources of who are these happy customers that are getting value, like that's really a place where you could feed it into an AI tool and be like, look for the patterns for me. Help me know, like, what is that happy path? What is that ideal customer journey?
Yeah. Yeah. And if you, for example, at the beginning of your mapping session, don't have a lot of data, so to say, what else would you suggest, you know, to gather information from your customers to kind of build this digital strategy?
Yeah. I mean, if you don't have lots of data, I mean, I do think if you don't have lots of quantitative data, I would think you have at least a few data points, even if you're very early stage, on who has renewed and expanded versus who has churned. So I would lean heavily on that data and whatever you have, and then lean on the qualitative data of talk to all your customer facing people and get their read, really just interview them on like, okay, what are the patterns we're seeing and who's succeeding with the tool and who's not succeeding with the tool. Also talk to your human CSMs and other like trainers, your live training teachers, your professional services, and even just get them all together in a call and just be like, how are you teaching them? What are the first five things? I'm sure you've tried it a million different ways. What are the first five things that seem to resonate with customers and that seem to get them to value quickly that you kind of found over time are working? That's a great form of data, in my opinion.
Yeah. So digital CS is basically connecting the data points, but making it then, you know, more scalable, right? And then of course, more customized going forward. You were speaking a couple of times today about the happy path of customers. So let's dwell a little bit more into the happy path of customers. So why do you believe it's so what is it basically, and why is it important?
Well, actually, I talk to a lot of companies where I ask them what is their happy path, or what have they agreed internally at their company is the path, first 5 or 10 things they want their users to do in the product. And I have lots of companies tell me, oh, we debate about that all the time and we haven't agreed. And, you know, our tool is so flexible. The customer can really just do anything and it's all just so great. And so flexible. And I'm just like, oh, no. Like I've been inside companies that have said that tons of times. And I'm just a big believer, if you want your new users, especially, to succeed at scale, a lot of users do not deal well with just a blank canvas that you hand them. Like, that's a lot. Do anything with our tool. Most users need some sort of, do a lot better with some sort of prescriptive guidance of like, first download this snippet, then create your first segment, then create your first chart. You know, like not rocket science, but what's the most vanilla path that a user should go through to get value from your tool? You're just trying to get them to value as quickly as possible. And saying, here's a blank canvas, best of luck, is for many of them, they're not going to get to value ever. They're going to just like give up. So you can always, they can always veer off your path. They can always be like, this is too simple or too prescriptive for me. I'm going to go do something ultra creative. But I really, really recommend deciding, aligning internally by looking at your qualitative and quantitative data. What is that happy path? Because what digital is very powerful at is getting them to go down that path in order to get to value. And if they stray away from that path, trying to bring them back to it. So like a new user nurture, which is the first thing I recommend companies should build when they're getting started with this, should be taking them through those 5 to 10 spots on the happy path and leading you along the path and getting you to try feature A, B, C, D, E. Now, I'm not trying to get you to try them by saying, try feature A, you'll love it. Like that's horrible messaging, right? Who cares about that? I'm trying to get you to use feature A by saying, don't you want to make your job easier in this way? I'll show you how in 2 minutes, right? So what's in it for them? I'm going to save them time. I'm getting them in there. And then the second nurture I recommend for companies to build is your re-engagement nurture, which is basically you've strayed, you haven't used for 90 days. I'm trying to get you back on the happy path, get you back to getting value from the product.
Amazing. So I mean, do you think that there could be some few happy paths? Because you mentioned that, you know, there are tools out there and folks approach the path or the tools differently, and they potentially have modules of these tools that give them more value than others. Mm-hmm. So would you rather than say you investigate or kind of have a pre-segment or like, you know, couple of paths that you then would focus on? Or do you really think there's one line that you need to stick to first of all and try to kind of take it from there? I'm just getting, because, you know, my question is it a balance act, or would you rather say at the beginning you would like to take them more firmly, you know, by their hand and guide them through?
Yeah. No, I'm glad you brought this up, because this is a really common pitfall I see when I go into advise digital CS teams who are getting started. They often feel very overwhelmed. It's usually like in the beginning, half a person's job or one person's job, right? And they're trying to build out all these experiences. And I hear over and over them saying, well, I have to build this out for all five of our personas. Like, and then I have to optimize it for all five of our personas. And I just do not recommend that right out of the gate. I recommend starting with one path, at maximum two. Like I have some clients who are like, I must have a different path for my admin versus my normal end user. And I think that is a valid argument. And that is the case in lots of companies. So that's fine if you want to split it by that, but not like every persona your product marketing team has mapped out, because it's just too overwhelming for the digital CS team as a whole. Because in those early days, you're doing a lot of testing and looking at the data of what is working. Honestly, not just in the early days, but all along, every single thing you launch, you're looking at how it went. You're learning from that. You're pivoting, you're re-optimizing, you're re-A/B testing. And so to be doing that right out of the gate for five paths, I've just seen so many companies like get overwhelmed and honestly give up on digital CS because it's just too much. So I always advise start with one or maximum two paths. If you're a multi-product company, then choose one product to start with. Generally, I recommend, you know, whatever is your flagship or biggest money maker or the ones that customers tend to buy first, right? You want to start with that one, and you want to think about what is the most vanilla path, the most generic way to get value from that first. You build that out first and test it, and then from there, you start bifurcating and branching into, okay, like they could go this way or they could go this way. That's how you continue to build out your digital CS offerings, is always by starting generic and then personalizing more and more from there.
That was a click moment for me because I had exactly the same moments that you described with clients, basically wearing very nervous and thought like they need to cater for so many. Now coming in and just saying, start small, start with the vanilla path, and then just basically start and learn and branch it out if necessary, but get something in and then evolve things. Which brings me to the next question, which is collaboration. So collaboration and ownership. So let's start with collaboration. So when you go, so I'm assuming there are product folks in the company and they basically say, we've got our personas already, and let's assume there are five personas and they've got their five paths in hand. Now you come in and say like, well, they should see us, let's start with one. So how do you sell it basically, or how do you collaborate with product in particular, I believe, to set yourself up for success?
Such an important topic. So first I'll just say, what's tricky about digital CX? One of the trickiest things about it is the relationships. And so if you're looking for somebody in your company who's going to lead digital, I would say the number one trait they need is to be a master collaborator, master cross-functional stakeholder, getting everybody to get along. Because if you think about what digital CX is, it's not something brand new. It's bringing together all these things that have existed in the company for a long time. The company has been emailing customers, or at least prospects, for a long time, right? You've been having some sort of guidance in UI for a long time. You've been having documentation and a digital university probably for a long time, and maybe also a community. Like, these are not new things. What's new is bringing it all together as digital CX under one strategy in a way that actually makes sense to the user, right? It doesn't feel like five different experiences or 10 different experiences, which are clearly owned by different teams, right? That's really important. And then in a way that's actually all working together to move this needle that I talked about earlier, move your leading indicator metric that is correlated to renewal. So you don't want a community team off there having like a completely different goal, and then a digital university over here with a completely different goal. You want it all driving toward, we want to move that metric that's showing the user is getting value from the tool. That's what makes it, this is what makes it valuable. This is what makes it able to actually take work off of human CSM's plates. So that's the first thing I'll say about like collaborating with other teams. So then it's incredibly important, if you're coming in with this kind of new shiny function in the company called digital CX, which, as I said earlier, I've done three times, right? I've walked this path. You come into a company where product is used to, you know, they already have lots of product adoption efforts underway. And it's like, what are you doing here, Holly, in my space? Like, what? This is my job. Same with marketing. They are accustomed to owning everything involving email. And so if I come in and say, oh, I really want to start doing these emails, like, might be very, I mean, this debate is happening at every company where digital is trying to get started, right? So you have to be very careful and very collaborative and never come in and just be like, oh, I'm not going to do at all what you suggest, or I don't care about your KPIs, it's all about my KPIs, right? You need to be building relationships with these people. I think one of the sentences I say the most to my clients is, you need to go become best friends with the head of product, or you need to go become best friends with the head of data. Like, that is your assignment between now and next time we meet. Like, you have to build that relationship. You have to care about what their boss wants from them and what they're KPI'd on, so you can make sure you're meeting your goals together. So with the specific question you asked, Thomas, of like, what if the product team is like, no, we have these five personas, like, this is how it needs to get started. And then the digital team comes in and says, oh no, it needs to be very vanilla. How I would handle that particular situation is to come in and be like, oh, these personas are wonderful. I love this thinking you've done around this. Absolutely, we're going to get to the point where we're going to have all five of these built out. These personas are crucial for our company and for our go-to-market model. I only have one person or half a person right now. So I really need to start by just building out one of them. So product team, let's talk together. What is the one persona that you think catches the most people, is the most, like if we had to start with just one, which we do, because those are the resources we have, this is the bandwidth we have to be able to test it. Which one do you suggest we start with that's the most representative and going to catch the most users? That's how I would handle that.
Yeah. Wow. So I'm assuming you come in as well and you have a plan how you want to progress. So of course, you know, pick your first, your most important one. But then I'm assuming you have a plan and guide them. And this is obviously then the value that you're adding there in this entire process. My other point was ownership as well. And you know, I love talking about customer success leadership and just basically, you know, making a mindset shift in when we come into scaling companies, scaling revenue functions, but also, you know, kind of aligning go-to-market functions as well. It almost sounds like it's not digital CS, it's actually almost digital go-to-market, isn't it? Because it's not only the CS that we know, like the post kind of says marketing is evolved and product is involved, you know, which is, you know, a part of this. So
yeah,
it's a big task, isn't it? So shouldn't we just enlarge it actually and just say it's when we talk about ownership, we really need to talk to folks here, like whatever the chief revenue officer, chief commercial officer, if there's a chief go-to-market officer, to really sponsor these initiatives, because otherwise I'm believing it might be just tough to move along and to align folks. What is your take on ownership when it comes to digital CS/go-to-market?
Yeah, totally agree. The more you can have that executive buy-in and sponsorship, just the easier everything's going to be. If you're just in the, you know, gridlock argument with your head of marketing versus head of digital CS, it's just really hard to decide, like, who gets to win? Is it just whoever's the loudest, right? So it's crucial to bring in that leadership level, the executive level of what are we all trying to do together as a company? And then how do we get rid of these silos to actually make it happen so that we are getting our customers to value at scale? And so to every company, like I can't tell you the one right way to structure it because every company is so different. And when, you know, in some companies it works really well to have the function that I'm calling digital CS could be sitting in marketing and could be called customer lifecycle marketing. And that's completely fine. That can work really well. I think what's important, regardless of where it's sitting, is again that goal. Is it sitting in marketing? If the ownership is with marketing and what they're KPI'd on is only how much are they driving new business and expansion, then we've kind of got a problem where we need to talk more with our executive level about what is the goal of the company here, right? Because if there's no goal to actually enable them with the product they've already bought and get them to value with the product they've already got, if marketing is only metriced on how well they're driving leads to sales, then that's going to drive the type of campaigns they launch and send, right? Mm-hmm. But if you're able to really collaborate with marketing and align on this North Star metric of like, yes, it's about revenue, but it's about revenue through expansion and we need to get them to renew and be happy with what they've already purchased. And a huge base of that ARR is renewal. So how can we make that part of your goal as well, customer marketing team? And that for sure requires alignment, you know, from your head of revenue, your head of marketing, your head of CS, or, you know, ideally, if it's all that one person, chief go-to-market officer, then hopefully they should be thinking across the board at all of that. But yeah, it lives in different places. If you have a company that's very strong in PLG, for example, you'll have, you may have this function sitting partially or entirely in product as thinking about, that's exactly what PLG is thinking about all the time is how do we get our customers to experience value digitally as quickly as possible so that they're going to want to purchase online.
Amazing. I would like to go back to the value chain, or how you built up the value chain basically with digital CS. So we were talking about what it is. You would say, you know, you said like, okay, we need to focus on our North Star metric, whatever this is, and make sure we of course have alignment and we have ownership. Great. So you were talking about different channels or campaigns.
Yeah.
And again, if I picture myself being a CS leader in a company and I say like, all right, so we've got a couple of data, right? We know what people want. I think we know what's our ideal case or what's the basically the happy path. What is next in this story? So would you just, so what is the biggest lever? You know, if you think about your KPI, your North Star, and working towards that to be super efficient. Is there anything in your world that you came across as being the number one tactic that you would recommend? I hope that makes sense. For me, I tried to kind of find out like, all right, so we know this now, great. So what's next? How can we actually bring it down and kind of, you know, put rubber to road and just make it work?
Yeah. Yeah. So as far as like what channel to use, I think the reality is that you've got to start with, as I said before, the most powerful is to have these omni-channel campaigns that fit together really well across different channels. The reality is day one, when you start, you probably don't have access to every channel. You probably are not in charge of the community and in charge of email and in charge of in-app guides and in charge of the university, et cetera, right? So most clients, I really advise them, you got to start with whatever channel you've got. In some cases, the easiest channel for them to have access to initially is email, especially if you have a CSP like a Gainsight or a Tatango or a Turn Zero, right? Like these have email capabilities and you already have all of your user data in there for your human CSMs to be leveraging. So I see a lot of companies start with email. I see a lot of companies start with, this is kind of up for debate. You believe what you want to believe, but I count as part of digital also one too many events that are delivered, you know, via Zoom or whatever, like the event we're in at this moment, right? So a lot of companies, I advise them to start by offering one-to-many office hours or one-to-many workshops if they're not already doing that, as an initial way to scale and to learn about their customers and to learn about their customer needs, and to be able to not have it all be just on the human CSM to help them one-on-one, right? To look for those patterns of where they're struggling and let's have office hours or events around that. What I think are the most powerful ways for these channels to work together, and actually I see companies that have been doing digital CS for quite a long time that still aren't doing this, which just shocks me. I think email and in-app guides can work so well together. And when I say in-app guides, I mean, you know, you can install a product that's a layer on top of your product UI, like a WalkMe or a Pendo or a Gainsight PX, right? That you're actually programming similar to making an email campaign. You're making like a, you're saying when they get to this page or when they click here, like show them this like slide out or this hotspot that's actually guiding them through. I think we all have experienced this as users, right? So I think it's incredibly powerful. Email and in-app guides are basically your two push channels where you're putting things in front of their faces, a checklist, a knowledge center in the UI, et cetera. And so to think about as you start building out your new user nurture, which as I said earlier, is the one that I suggest building first, you want to test each of those points on their own as like what we call a batch and blast, right? As just, I'm just trying this to a group of customers who are new users. I'm trying this one touch point and seeing, does it lift their active usage or their health score, or whatever is that leading indicator I'm trying to move, right? And then I test individually all these different touch points and I see which ones win, right? Which ones are actually moving the needle the most. Those are the ones that I want to string together into this nurture path. Well, your nurture is a word that originally came from email marketing, right? And so you think about it as being a series of 5 to 10 emails that all come, you know, every few days. But you also can have this nurture experience in app and have what I call entry points via email and via in app. That's the same, trying to get them to do the same behavior, right? Now, obviously, you need to have segmentation such that if they already clicked on it in app, you don't send them the email and vice versa. So it's not obnoxious. But then I see so many campaigns like this where when you click on the CTA, that button in the email, it goes to an article for them to read or a video for them to watch. I actually don't think that's best practice. I think the best possible thing you can do is lead them straight into your product, to that page and that feature that you're trying to get them to use in order to get value now. So don't make them go read something. That can be like a follow-up if they want to, that you can share with them as a follow-up tip. But get them right there into the product and get them using that feature A, B, C, D, or E that's on your happy path, that is going to get them that immediate gratification in 2 minutes. So I always recommend that the CTA takes them into the product UI and launches a how-to flow that you build using Pendo or WalkMe or whatever, walking them through in 1 to 4 steps how to get value from the product right now. So that, you know, Thomas, if you were my client and I was advising you on how to get started, I would tell you try some one-to-many events and try building your first one and second touch point that are you're testing to see if they're going to become part of your new user nurture, and build them both in email and in in-app if you possibly can get access to both those tools. If you can't get access to both, then do what you can get access to.
Yeah, totally. Sorry, we have 2 questions coming through. So actually we have more, but I try to multitask. So I think from Camille and also Karen, there were some questions regarding email fatigue. I just put myself again into my shoes as a consumer and getting all these emails. So is there a point of, and you said email is very effective, right? If it's done right and if it's done, you know, appropriately, addressing the happy path, addressing the pain point going forward. Is there any advice in terms of setting up emails that really reduce email fatigue? Is that a question that you come across quite regularly by your clients?
Yeah, you're absolutely right to be asking this. This is something you need to keep your eye on all the time when you're doing digital. So there's a couple ways to think about email fatigue, a few different ways. So one is think about how many different emails are coming from your company. So that's one problem is if the sales team is sending from one channel, the email team is sending from another channel, and the digital CS team is sending from another channel, not knowing what each other are sending and maybe sending too much. So the way to solve that is actually, unfortunately, very common for these teams to be on different tools, not seeing what each other are sending. So if you can all get on the same tool, that's the ideal. But at least what you should have is a shared calendar of any time you're doing big blasts. And it can just be literally a shared spreadsheet. The hard part is not the spreadsheet. The hard part is getting all the teams on board of like, yes, we all agree we want to not bombard the user. We want to have the emails that come from our company feel holistic and fit together well, right? So the other way to address this is like, I see a lot of companies like wanting to blast everything to every user at every account. And it's just like, nope, that's what segments are for, right? Like, even if you have like a monthly newsletter or a like huge product release that people want it to go to everybody, I think it should be incredibly rare, like twice a year, that you actually have an announcement that it needs to go to every single user at every single account. I think for the most part, it's like, okay, this is most relevant to the champion and the executive buyer at the account, or this is most relevant to our power users who have used at least 30 times in the last 30 days, et cetera, et cetera. Like thinking through across all those teams, like who did this make sense for it to go to, so that they're getting the emails that are most relevant to them. So just within your company, you're basically training the user to either ignore your emails that come from your company because they're crap, or you're teaching them over time, like, no, what we send you is really relevant and interesting and you should open it and you should click on it. So that's why I'm telling you, you want to have this North Star metric and you want to test if what you're sending is actually moving the needle, because if it's not, turn it off, because you're creating more email fatigue. You're dividing their attention for no good reason, because it's not actually moving the metric you want to move. And you need to like use that attention from your user very carefully. And so over time, you'll get lots of teams across the company coming to you and wanting to send an email for everything on earth. And so it's really important to have those great relationships and really be able to like calmly think through with your other stakeholders, okay, what is the goal of this email? What are we trying to get them to do? And how does that contribute to revenue? And just kind of over time, you know, in the first few battles, like maybe nobody will listen and you'll just still have to send it, even though you think it doesn't make tons of sense for the user. But over time, you can really change the culture of your company to be very careful about what you send. So you should always be keeping an eye on your unsubscribe rates with all the emails you send. And if you're seeing that go up, it definitely means that the fatigue is getting too high and you need to cut back your quantity. But there's no like magic amount, like different companies. I mean, there's like common sense. Don't email them like 5 times every day, obviously. But like there's a pretty big range, and you'll see for your company, for your users, what's that upper limit when you see those unsubscribe rates go up. A larger issue that you're maybe bringing up is email fatigue in general, not just from your company. And for sure, that's a thing. And that's one reason why you need omnichannel. You need not just email, because you will have a large percent of your users who simply ignore every email from you. And you just need to accept that. You're not going to have an email that has 100% open rate. But for some of your users, they really will like email and they will still use it. And email still is a powerful tool even today.
Again, that brings me to this leadership and ownership question, right? So that's for me a very strong bond that you need to have with you, a CMO, for example, and making sure, even with the product team, again, you know, that you all are sitting in one room and making sure you're all very clear not only on the priorities, but how you want to roll it out and how great it could look like. And I think that's the point why you exist, I believe, you know, because you know how great look like and how to educate folks as well, to then being transported and kind of being accelerated within these kind of key stakeholders, right? And then hopefully, you know, create a learning system, as you said, you know, about how you create emails, the frequency, the, you know, the experiences you want to, you know, excel or kind of pull up and so on and so on. Great. I have one more question, and then I would like to quickly talk about the future, because we have just 10 minutes left. I know it's like flying. So Gary, I like your question. He said, like, as we scale through automation, how do we avoid a false sense of success where the metrics looks healthy, but the customer feels unseen? What signals should we actually be listening to in digital CS? I think that's a quite interesting question. So it's this, what are your thoughts on that one? Go ahead.
I guess I just say, and maybe we can, like, I would just say, if the metrics look healthy, but the user feels unseen, then we might be looking at the wrong metrics, because we don't want to be at a point where we want, where we have to manually ask every user or every company, how are you doing? I mean, there are a lot of companies out there who only have human CS, are not looking at data much, and really are relying on those monthly meetings and those quarterly business reviews to ask the customer, how are you doing? How much value are you getting from the product? And are manually collecting that information. But in digital, and where we're trying to do things at scale, we can't be manually asking every customer. So what we need are metrics that are really good proxies for they are getting value. And so as you're designing like an active usage metric, for example, I really urge you to not, like, it may be that your starting point is that active usage equals they logged into the product once. That's a fine place to start, but it's not a fine place to stay long term. You want to get much more sophisticated than that to what actually shows me they are getting value from the tool. What is a proxy that shows me? So is it that they're pulling charts? Is it that they're whatever your product does? I've worked for lots of analytics tools, so I've done a lot of metrics about they've either viewed a chart or they created a chart, right? Or if it's a campaign building tool, then they've actually deployed these campaigns. What are these moments that actually matter to them? If going in and fiddling something in the admin console is not a behavior that they're actually feeling value from, then don't include it in your active usage metric, right? Include those behaviors. And I've seen some companies where it's like they have like 20 or 50 behaviors in the tool that they know qualitatively from talking to customers that these really make the customers feel that the product is delivering value for their business. And so you can make literally just a combo event of those 20 actions and those equal active usage, because you know those are the behaviors that they care about that they're getting value from. As far as like feeling unseen, I feel like maybe that's a nod to kind of like high ratio models or pooled models where they don't have an assigned CSM. And like, for sure that can happen. And that's a concern. Yeah. I see some companies moving away from pooled models toward still having very high ratios, but you still have an assigned name of a CSM for that reason, to try to make them feel like you are supported by a human. They don't tell the company, well, the human has 1,000 other accounts they're also looking after, but like you have an assigned CSM can be one way to help with that, helping them feel seen as you.
Yeah. I see this as a feedback loop, because if Gary, my 2 cents basically are, if you see there's an issue, then for me, that's an indication, quite what you said, you're potentially not measuring the right ones, or you're not capturing another feedback that then really comes and goes into the feedback loop. So you need to be able to, at any given time, identify any feedback from your customers through whatever the input that you gather from not only the usage, but also the conversation, the QBRs, the check-ins or whatever. And that should really bring up these issues and should bring up exactly, you know, where the issues are. And if that is something that you don't measure at the moment or not being represented by your KPI, then you need to adapt. But this is why you do it. And this is also the beauty, I think, of digital CS going forward. Ollie, I would like to talk to you about, or I would love to talk with you about the future of digital CS. The future. I know, crystal ball, we are living in the amazing times of AI, of course. And I feel like every 6 months we need to adapt, we need to change, we learn so much. So asking you the question of what is the future of digital CS looking like is almost a bit impossible, but I will try it anyway. And I'm assuming you will have an answer. So what is your take on the future of digital CS?
Yeah, I think about this and talk about this a lot, Thomas, because I mean, I do think digital obviously is a place where AI is already so in there and will continue to drastically change how my job is and how many of your jobs are. So so many companies are already leveraging AI tons for digital CS. And so I'm seeing it in the content creation. I think probably that's the first that comes to mind for lots of us, is using tools that are helping automatically like make videos or make writing the content, the draft copy of your email for you, giving you two different subject lines to choose between, right? Tons of people leveraging AI there. But where I'm seeing it coming more and more in is to actually trigger campaigns. And so, kind of in the past, it would be like maybe you'd trigger a campaign off of your health score that you built in your CSP, your algorithm, right? Are they red, yellow, or green? More and more, we're seeing that triggering actually happening off of a churn prediction model that's AI, that is real time, that is much more nuanced than just like red, yellow, or green, right? And if they're looking unhealthy, are they savable or not? Should we just like not worry about them, right? You can have like so many bifurcations in your model of what are the different experiences you show to them. Also tons of AI coming in kind of what I would say is the last part of every digital CS campaign is measuring that impact and deciding whether to keep doing this. So we all know that AI is more and more surfacing those insights for us rather than us having to manually build reports. So more and more that can be a feedback loop, an automatic feedback loop of the AI figuring out what the impact of this campaign is and feeding that into all future campaigns, looking for those patterns. I think what's really super interesting, if you think about digital CS, is that in the past, it's all been built on what we call marketing automation. So you put rules into a tool like Marketo or HubSpot or whatever, or a Gainsight. You're putting rules in, you're putting filters in. If they are this type of customer, if they fit all these different filters, that's my segment, and I want you to show this experience to this segment. So what's going to happen as everything becomes more and more agentic is that instead of showing it to a segment of 100 or 1,000 or 100,000 users, it's like the agentic experience is going to be a segment of one user. This one user has exhibited this behavior, so show them this experience. So exactly how that tooling transition is going to happen, I do not know, but I do know that's where everything's headed. And so at some point, like marketing automation isn't going to be a thing. We aren't going to be building these segments of new users who need the new user experience. It's going to be a segment of Holly or a segment of Thomas who's a new user. And what does that particular person need? Wow. So it's exciting times. It's all changing so fast.
Yes. Holly, we've got 40 seconds left. So how can folks connect with you? Let us know. Yeah. Can they reach out and actually book your, you know, let them in to help them build the digital CS?
Absolutely. Please come find me on LinkedIn or please come to my website, hollygoodliff.com. Would love to connect with you and chat more.
Amazing. Holly, and as always, not as always, it's because it's the first episode, but here's the thing. I would love to dedicate the last closing note to my guest. So close us out, Holly. What do you want us to take away from this session? What are your closing notes?
Digital CS is so powerful to help your business. It's not a nice to have, it is an essential. And you can do this. You can get it started and grow it to really make the human and the digital work together so well for your customers.
Amazing. Guys, thank you so much for joining us. Holly, it was a pleasure. Thank you for all this knowledge. I learned a lot, and I'm assuming everyone does. This is, of course, being recorded, and you can see this recording, and I also will find some snippets here for LinkedIn. Thank you, guys. If you have any questions, as Holly said, reach out to her, reach out to me. It was a pleasure having this first episode with you guys. Thank you very much, and have a great day.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye-bye.